in the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahapurana, Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate Purana, the Super Purana, the supreme spiritual book, the book of Krishna and devotion to Krishna, Krishne sva dhammo bhagate dharma jnani dibhiksaha, kalo nashta jasham esha purana ko duno ditaha. And when the son of Krishna's appearance has set, Krishna left the world and said, where will we get light from the Bhagavat Purana? Risen like a brilliant sun to give guidance to the people of Kali Yuga, to everyone, but particularly the people of this age. And there are 12 sections, and the 10th part is the birth of Krishna. So I used to think, why did I wait so long? Tell me right away about Krishna. They're telling you beginning, middle, and end about Krishna. But before you get to the birth of Krishna, and then his happy play as a child with his mother and father, and his boyfriends, and then later his girlfriends, and the sweet pastimes with Radharani and Brajagopis, there needs to be some, we need to understand the backstory. Otherwise, we'll think Krishna, ordinary person, if just right away they're telling all of this. So just think, 18,000 verses there, 12 sections, and the birth of Krishna is not described until the 10th section, the 10th canto. And sometimes it's compared to a body, the whole book, and say the 10th the beginning cantos are like lotus feet of Krishna, and then you, and the 10th canto is like this beautiful smiling face of Krishna, which we're told is so sweet. He is sweetness personified. But what does Bilba Mango say in his verse? Maduram, maduram, madurasya vibho. Maduram, madanam, badanam, maduram, madugandhim, ridu, smitam, etadaho. Maduram, 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 maduram. You should say, what does the word maduram mean? Sweet. So he's saying it four times, or many is saying, he's sweet, sweet, sweet. How sweet? He's saying the form of Krishna is inconceivably beautiful and sweet. But if you look up the form of Krishna, then when you see the face of Krishna, even more is sweeter. And then they say, and if on that sweet form with the sweet face, Krishna smiles, sweeter still than sweet, sweet, sweet. How sweet, we can't say, is Krishna. And the 10th canto is compared to the sweet, smiling face of Krishna. But before that, in the beginning, we need some foundation to understand. And so we're told in the beginning about different incarnations of Krishna. And then they say, how many are there? Let me say, oh, how many? As innumerable as the waves of the ocean. So how many waves are there in the ocean? Anyone know? You can Google that. How many waves there are in the ocean? No, she knows. Infinite. Because sometimes you go, why aren't there more coming, or, you know, to help us out? He's incarnating left, right, and center eternally, constantly, always, in one way or another, to help us, to guide the fallen souls back, and to display such charming pastimes that on hearing them, our hearts will be touched and Krishna conception awakened, and the divine form of Krishna appears within us in our consciousness, and we are charmed and start moving in that direction. But different pastimes for different purposes. And there this list is given. And an interesting statement says, Ete cha angsa kalat pungsa. All these past avatars, they're called, you will hear about. What does the Sanskrit word avatar mean? Avataram means one who descends from the spiritual world. That's avatar. Avataram, who comes down from the spiritual world into this world. So many avatars. There's a song, I don't know if you sang it. Did you sing Das Avatars? All right. There, Dot means 10. So we're saying, there are innumerable avatars, so many. And Bhagavatam lists around 24 principal ones. But in this song, 10 principal avatars are given. And one of them is Buddha. So Buddha is not in competition with Krishna or separate or different, but like the Thai people say, same, same, but different. But Buddha is Krishna, Krishna is Buddha. That we have to grasp. If you grasp that, then you can understand Buddha, Buddha, everything. If we don't grasp that, you have wrong idea. So Buddha is mentioned. You see an Angkor Wat in Cambodia, the Kurma avatar as turtle, tortoise. You see at the Suvarnabhumi airport when you cross customs. They're the one side are the gods, the other side are the demons, and they're with the celestial serpent. They're churning the milk ocean in search of what are called Amrita, which generally people call the nectar of immortality. But it's more than that. Just to live forever, that's not necessarily the best thing. In the Greek mythology, one man said, please give me immortality. He said, you're giving me immortality. He forgot to ask to be young. So he got older, 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 you know, like just kept getting older and older and older. He said, I should have said immortality plus youth. But to have that, then you have to come to Krishna conception. Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanam Cha. Although he's the oldest of all, the oldest person, Navayovana, he appears as eternally youthful, like a very charming Cupid personified, like teenage form, seductively charming. Kandarpakoti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. How much? They said, take that Cupid conception, magnified 10 million times. If 10 million Cupids could appear in one person, that's how irresistibly charming, attractive, sweet, beautiful is Krishna. Right. So that Krishna appears in different forms. He plays like the child likes to play, and we like to play. And sometimes we dress up in different ways when we play. Right? Sometimes people like to dress up like a dragon, like on Chinese New Year. You have one guy is going like this, like that, and the other guy is in the back, you know, and they're going around the streets like, it's fun, we do that. Children, they go have a play, and they play an animal or a flower or something, and they're very happy to do that. It's a natural tendency. All these tendencies, they come from the Supreme Entity. He likes to play. When he played as the turtle, they were having a problem churning that ocean. So he appeared as this giant turtle, very beautiful, and said, oh, I have an itch on my back I can't reach because I'm a turtle. Right? Even we know it's very difficult to, you need help. He's giving service opportunities. So they put a mountain on his back, churn the mountain, the ocean starts generating the moon, Lakshmi Devi, many wonderful things, and he's getting relief, going, ah. And as he goes, ah, the Veda, divine sound vibration that will liberate all humanity is coming from his mouth and his breathing. So when he breathes, he's liberating everybody. Even his breathing has such an effect. So, different avatars, different purposes, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhaviti bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sridhamyaham. What does Krishna say? Right? There's divine revelation, right? You can call it religion, you whatever you want, I'll call it divine revelation. And so it comes down, and then he's saying, but in time, time has a way of, how do I say, diminishing, diverting, distracting, moving away. We talked about this yesterday, from that revelation, that truth. And he's saying, when it gets really bad, it's one thing if it goes a little bit off this way, course correction is easy. He's saying, but when the truth is so far removed from the truth that it's become the opposite of truth, it's now a lie, falsity, then he descends himself as one of his major avatars, or he empowers an individual, Shaktavesh avatar, for course correction, to restore the truth to its former purity. So sometimes it's a collective thing, civilizationally wide thing, like the Buddha avatar, to direct entire civilizations. Sometimes it's in a personal situation too. Or when there's some dispute between the gods and the ungodly, or otherwise known as the demons. Right? So this is the appearance day of Lord Nrsimhadev. And like here in Thailand, they're familiar with the word Singha, means lion, right? And Nara means man. So Nara Singha, Nar Singh. He's half lion, half man. But as Gurudev would say, and looking very nice. He's very beautiful. Like that's because we see these sort of terrifying, we can't imagine how beautiful Nrsimhadev is. But we look like we have our puppy and different things, and we see like how cute they can be and charming, even an animal in this world. So how beautiful do you think Lord Nrsimhadev is? Inconceivably beautiful. His mane, how he looks, and his gestures, and just everything about him. For the devotees. For the non-devotees, not so much. They're seeing in a different... They're fearful of Nrsimhadev. But still, Nrsimhadev is Krishna playing in a particular way, always for what? To reciprocate the devotion that is in the heart of his devotee. That's why he appears in these different ways. As tam bhakti yoga paribhavita hrit saroja ase shutikshita shuto patayo nanunata pungsan. It's very interesting. Hrit saroja means, there are many words for lotus and lotus flower. Hrit saroja means the lotus of the heart. Heart is also a lotus. And the heart that is infused with love and devotion for Krishna, that's like a fully blossomed, blooming lotus. And then Krishna appears on that lotus of the heart of his... And the devotee is very happy, thinking always of that eternal form of the Lord on the lotus of his heart. Right? So what we find at this stage... Not just like a troubled situation on the earth planet, but in the universe, heavenly planets, other planets, that sometimes, and we see this all the time, even present, man, they want to control the world, right? By any means. They say, power. Kana, Kamani, Pratishta, name and fame, power. Some people say it's the ultimate aphrodisiac. It takes them beyond the accumulation of wealth and sexuality. They want power. They want to control everything, if possible. And we see this reflected in different ways. They want to control the weather, right? The movements of the planets. That's like, you know... scaling up this concept. So to achieve this, they perform austerities. Right? So there was one such person who goes by the name of Hiranyakashipu. Hiranya means gold. Kashipu, I remember this, the old devotee Nayana Biram, he used to write these things into like Broadway plays with songs. And the song, yeah, was Hiranya means gold, Kashipu means soft bed. Grant me this boon that I'll never drop dead. Never drop dead. That's what I said. So, see, you can learn things that way. I can't forget that. That was 40 years ago. Prabhupada watched these plays and would just like glow. They were funny, but they got the point across, the truth. So Hirani means gold, Kashipu means soft bed. They're saying he's just interested in, you know, money and, you know, a comfortable life. And to control the universe and everyone in it in his spare time. Right? So, but to do this, and what he wants is that same thing, those gods, and what do they want? Amrita. Right? What is that? In Sanskrit, death, the word for death, mrityu, mrita, mrityum means death. Amrita means deathless, immortality. So amrita, it's commonly transferred as nectar. But what it means is that nectar, because they thought if you get some of this nectar on you, you live forever. And there was a pot. When they churned this ocean, the nectar was collected in the pot by another incarnation named Mohini Murti. And that would be more difficult to describe. But may be very popular in Thailand. But anyway, the Mohini Murti captured all the nectar and then was running away with this pot of nectar. And they're all one to get, if you get that nectar on you, then you can so-called live forever. Again, look at the fine print about immortality and nectar. What does it really mean? And that we'll come to later. But so this Hiranyakasipu, he had everything except he realized, as most materialists do, that no matter how good your material situation is, you have to die. So it doesn't matter how much wealth you accumulate, wealth, women, name, fame, etc. You have to die, and then it's all gone, right, for you, right? Just like an insurance policy, you don't collect the money, right? Some other people get to collect the money. You know, sometimes they're going, boy, I wish he would die. Then we can get all that money, and we can have fun. You know, it's basically, it's just been going on forever. So he realizes the one flaw in his plan. He's got everything, controlling the universe, everyone in it, but he wants to be immortal. That's, I'll have to die, and then it's all over, like Ozymandias. So he starts performing austerities. And what does he do? So, is there a yoga where you stand on your tiptoes like this? That's what he was doing. That's a tough one. On your tiptoes like this. And he's suspending his breathing to the point where he's almost like not breathing. And he's holding this position for so long that an anthill starts building around him. You understand? Anthill? Huh? You, Sulakshana, do you understand? A big anthill, right? Not like this, like human size. It's growing. I've seen them in Brazil, actually. These giant ones. You saw them too, right? I mean, they're... Okay, there you go. We've got one. Don't do yoga inside that anthill. Imitation is suicide. So anyway, he's doing that. And so the anthill forms around him. That means years. What are we told? 100 celestial years. That's like thousands and thousands of years, like intense. what is it we're told? As his breathing, now the whole universe is mirroring his breathing. Some people are starting to like choke, oh, I'm not getting enough air, you know, like that. And what's happening? The ants, they're eating away the flesh on his body, but he's still like this. So at a certain point, all there is like a skeleton with certain like genetic level things going on. Somehow his soul, his atma, is still maintaining life, the pran, the chi, in this skeleton-like thing. And he's still there like that. And the whole universe feels the weight of his austerities. It's that powerful. And so the gods, and they always appeal to Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, like, do something. You know, we're the Hare Krishna. Jai Sudevi Dasi has come to join us with her associate Chandrakanti. Hare Krishna. So, Brahma, he always has to intervene. So he comes and he sees this extraordinary scene. You know, it's scary. And says to him, I'm reciprocating, you know, all this austerity you've been doing, thousand celestial years, hundred, whatever. What do you want? I'm ready to give you a boon. Oh, and the first, Brahma has a special kamandalu pot. You ever see these little, like, pots they carry? Has a little, and it's like not amrita, but some nectarine-like substance gets his body to come back to this extraordinary, muscular, golden form. And Brahma says, how may I serve you? I'm here to offer some boon to you. And Hiranyakashipu says, you know, just to cut to the chase, I only want one boon from you. Oh, what is that? Happily, I want to be immortal. And then Brahma says, have you read the Bhagavad Gita? There's a verse in there. Says sahasra yuga parjantam ahur yad brahmano vidu, that 1,000 yuga cycles taken together makes a day, 12 hours of Brahma, that's 4,300,000,000 years. 2 times that, 8,600,000,000, that's a day. 30 such days approximately in a month, depending whether you're on the solar lunar calendar, 12 times that, etc. So he said, look, the average lifespan of a person on my planet is 15 trillion years. That's pretty good. The average lifespan of a devata is 10,000. That's lower level, heavenly planet. Brahma Loka, 15 trillion years, average lifespan. He said, what's my lifespan as Brahma, creator of the universe, lord of the universe? 315 trillion years plus. But I'm not immortal. I'm not immortal. I can't give you immortality. I have to die. All the Brahmas will go. When this creation, they'll all go also. So Atmabhu Brahma, who was born atop the lotus flower of Garbhadakshai Vishnu. So then Hiranyakashipu is very smart. Then he's thinking, like, all right, if you can't just give me, you know, out and out, this straight mortality, how about a series of boons? No, yes, no problem. And he's saying, like, all right, so I can't, that I will not be able to be killed by any animal or human being. Brahma said, granted. Okay. And I won't be able to be killed at the day or the night. Got it. I won't be killed inside or outside. Okay. What else? By any weapon? Yeah. Not by any weapon. No, nope. Got it. Goes through the whole list. Would I leave something else out? Anyway. So he makes this whole list, and Hirani comes to people and he's like, I tricked you. Now I am immortal. I'm not going to die day or night by any man or beast, any weapon, inside or outside. I got it. I got you. Right? But like an insurance policy. But one thing he should have looked at, like on, if you look at the small print on the insurance policy, they list all, and we cover this, we cover that, you know, and then they'll have this line that says, this policy does not include acts of God, right? That, if you looked on a real fine print, this does not include acts of God, however that might be. So this Hiranyakashipu, he thinks, I got the insurance policy from Brahma, I will never die, all those conditions. So he's going on happily in his life. Demigods tremble at the sound of his name or the sound of his footsteps. He's running the universe. He's particularly angry at Vishnu, who killed his brother. He had a brother named Hiranyaksha, who fought with the boar incarnation, Varaha. And that's a kind of a personal grudge that he's holding. And still he's saying, you know, have some children, pass on my assets to the child. So I need my child to be educated. And he has this, his wife, what's her name, Kayadu, yeah, she becomes pregnant. So he's saying, oh, this, I hope it's a boy. But meanwhile, the demigods, the devata, they're thinking, oh, like, this is never going to, if he has a son, this is going to go on, you know, we're in worse trouble. Who knows what that son could be like, being the offspring of someone so demonic and evil as Hiranyakashipu. So they kidnap his wife, Kayadu, and they want to, they take her to the ashram of Narada, Narad Rishi, and they're thinking, well, any way you play that, it's not very palatable. They're thinking, after he's born, infanticide. They will kill this demonic child, but they will allow him to be born, whatever, I don't want to get into it. So when he's there, Narad Rishi, he's Trikalagya, means he knows everything, past, present, future. He's Narada, Srivast Thakur and Gauralila. And he said, you're fools, you don't understand what you're about to commit, the ultimate aparad. Not only is the boy, there's a boy within her, not only is he a devotee, he's a Mahajan. He's one of the greatest devotees ever. Right? So this, you give up this demonic plan of yours. Oh, he's a great devotee, and you'll be astonished when he appears, what he will show as a great devotee, and the Lord, as usual, his love and affection for the devotee, how it will manifest, and it's in that way that everything will become properly adjusted. So Narada dissuades them from killing Kayadu's embryo. Inside is the devoted Prahlad, the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj. But still, she stays in the ashram to like give birth to the child. And while she's there, Narada, like same Narada, Narada Bhakti Sutras, Narada, he's giving all these spiritual instructions. And remember, she's a pregnant woman. She's like listening and saying, I'm hungry. You know, do you have fruit roll-ups here at the ashram? You know, she's dealing with her pregnancy, and sometimes she's falling asleep, or she's very tired, But Prahlad inside, the embryo, the baby in that, can hear, actually. That's why it's also important, what they hear during the pregnancy. He's hearing everything and just drinking it in. So Narada is really instructing Prahlad. And the mom, she's getting something and something, but he's getting everything. Right. So when he's born, he's already so spiritually evolved, developed. So when he's, it's time to go to school, and he's 5 years old, when they're teaching him the ABCs, or in Sanskrit, kaka gagana, right? Anyone here know? Cha cha jajana, papa babama, yaralava. It goes like that. Kaka gagana, cha cha jajana, papa babama, yaralava, sa 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 sha sha, sa sha sha, like Krishna. Anyway, he's learned. So the first is ka, A, B, C. Ka is the first syllable. So when they go, all right, class, ka, 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 Prahlad goes, ka, ka, Krishna. It just here, ka reminds him of Krishna. He faints. Right? And they say, well, and they get the report of the parent, how is he doing? Well, he's having trouble with the alphabet. Really? Yeah, he goes, ka, Krishna, he's fainting. Right? Ga, Govinda, he, everything, Jiva Goswami, Harinamamrita Vyakaran, everything reminds him of Krishna. Every syllable, this is the level Prahlad is on at 5 years old. So Prabhupada liked to quote this verse from Prahlad, Komara acharet pragyo dharmam bhagavatam iha. When should you start Krishna consciousness? He said, Kumar, from the Kumar, that means when you're a child, that'll be best, because that you'll take with you lifelong. So Prahlad, excuse me, ka, ga, after ka comes ga, then Govinda fainting again. So then they notice Prahlad, when it's time for recess and all the children are playing, Prahlad is gathering little groups of children and preaching to them Krishna consciousness and his anti-materialistic philosophy, you could say. And the other kids are into it, on top of it all, telling their parents. when the devotees, in California, they moved to this place called Visalia, and the local school was so small, there's many devotee children, The local school was so small, there was a majority of devotees, and then the non-devotee children their parents thought they were having some strange issues, what? And they go well, they're refusing to eat meat. And when we ask them why, they say, because Krishna loves the cows. Or the, who? Uh-huh. Yeah, and then the other thing was, and then they said, and they thought they were calling, the kids were calling the non-devotee children karmis, but what the parents thought, they were calling them carnies, short for carnivore. So the non-devotee kids had issues. So it's the words getting back to the parents, what's it? Well, Prahlad says that, married family life is like a well covered with grass. If you fall into that, no one can hear you or save you. Griha undaka. And they're oh my goodness. And he's saying so many things, which I won't mention them all now. But Prabhupada would, all the time, heavy slokas from Prahlad Maharaj, particularly about mundane relationships, we could say. Anyway, in this, the words get, you know, every parent wants to know how they're doing, the child is doing, and a different something. The teacher's going to say, you know, Prahlad, he's polluting the other children. With what? Krishna, bhakti, Vishnu bhakti, devotion. What? My son? You know, I won't have a kid like that in my house. So he's saying that he has to get to the bottom of this. He's chastising the teachers. He goes, why are you teaching him these things? We're not teaching him that. He seems to already know these things, and he's polluting the other children with these conceptions. So Hiranyakashipu, he's calling Prahlad in to like have that father-son talk, you know, got the report card and how to deal with this, takes Prahlad on his lap. He's like smelling his head like, oh, my child is so cute and wonderful, and starts asking Prahlad a series of questions. Beginning to think, Prahlad, what's the best thing you've learned? And he said, oh, what is the best thing I learned? Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. To hear about Krishna, to chant about Krishna, to remember Krishna. He mentioned 9 different types of devotional service. So that's really the best thing. But what's beautiful in the Bhagavatam, he addresses his father as Asura Varja, which means, oh, best of the demons. Otherwise known as Dad. Oh, Asura Varja. So, lest we think Vedavyas doesn't have a sense of humor. So, this is, we know, what do they say, out of the mouths of babes? Sometimes children say very offensive things to their parents, right? Things that are just like really cut them to the quick, you know. And then they try and, like, well, it's just a child, maybe they don't know really what they're saying. But what Prahlad is saying is just anathema. It's Hiranyakashipu, it's just, he can't stand it. And especially it's, in this case, Vishnu. The same Vishnu. He's talking about having devotion to Vishnu. It's that same Vishnu who killed his brother, Hiranyaksha, and he's seeking vengeance against him. So he's thinking, like parents, that they think, I can break this kid. Right? Let's see how he might stand up to a little torture. Right? So he commands the teachers to begin a series of torture for Prahlad Maharaj, to surround them with fire. Everything they do, Prahlad's just like, Krishna, 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 Nama, Kirtanan. You know, he's just taking the name of Krishna, he's chanting, he's doing what he said. He's hearing about making kirtan, remembering. They try and throw him off cliffs, get him with spears, elephants, everything. And somehow Prahlad miraculously survives. And Hiranyakashipu, when he asks, how's the torture program going? Saying, no matter what we do to him, somehow, not only does he survive, but he remains unaffected. Hello, Hare Krishna. So then he's thinking, that's strange. Did you do all the same? Yeah, we threw him off the cliff, freezing water, boiling, you know, we're trying to stop him. We have elephants trying. None of it. He just keeps taking Krishna Nam and chanting slokas, and he seems to be like in a never-ending state of ecstasy on top of it all. So this really irks Hiranyakashipu. And he's saying, all right, then, you know, I'll personally deprogram Prahlad. I can break him, bring him to me. And they bring Prahlad Maharaj to him. And what we should say is, at this point, what was Prahlad telling beyond what I mentioned there? Very beautiful thing. What I used to think about this sometimes, because you can make various calculations when these pastimes took place. Minimally, it's millions of years ago. But it could have been many, many, many millions of years ago. And Prahlad's teachings are just spot on, they're relevant, they're it's not like they've aged or they're no longer resonate. So you think about that. That's what I mean by like eternal, you know, Sanatan Dharma, or that which is eternally valid and relevant. So, and what did he say? Yes, Hare Krishna. You too can take the name of Krishna. So when he meets with Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakashipu is going like, this Krishna consciousness you speak of, you know, where did you get this? Or how can I get some? If you can do all these miraculous things with it. And you think, Matirna Krishna Parataksvato Ba Midopi Padyeta Griha Vratanam Adanta Gobir Bisatam Tamisram Punat Punat Charvita Charvananam. He's saying, Matirna Krishna, that means Krishna consciousness. You don't get this anywhere and everywhere, my dear father, or from anyone and everyone. Right? And he said, and especially these people, Adanta Gobir, he said, who are, their senses are out of control, their uncontrolled tongues, their uncontrolled mind, their uncontrolled everything else, they're out of control. You can't be led by people who were led around mercilessly, like slaves of their senses. Like Guru Maharaj said once, is freedom for the senses, or understood as freedom from the senses? Which freedom are you looking at? Western civilization is freedom for the senses, to do anything and everything, right? In the name of self-expression. Guru Maharaj said, liberation proper is freedom from the senses, to not be a slave of your senses. And then the last line says, punat punat charvita charvananam. And what are these people doing? He said, repeatedly, over and over again, individually, collectively, generationally, chewing the chewed. And what, in other words, what someone else sucked whatever juice there might have been there to begin with, you're chewing that, and the chewed, etc. He's saying, so you're never going to get it with this kind of approach. Then he says, what's another one? No. And then, Mahi Yasho Padrajo Vishit Niskinchananam Navrinita Yava. Oh, no, another one he says, Nate Vidu Swartaka Tim Hibishnu Durase Yir Bahirarti Manina. Andayatantar Upagiyamana Tepishatantam Urudam Nibadha. And what's the problem? Is people who they're searching for fulfillment in external things. That's bahi, bahir artha. And what is it comparable to there and other places? Like, you know, rice. Rice has the husk, right? It's that little covering of the rice. So you peel up, you separate the husk and then the rice. You think, so it's like, this is mentioned elsewhere in the Bible, like if you're beating the husk, the rice has already been removed. There's nothing there. So he's saying, you're searching for internal fulfillment in external things. And it's beautiful. This sloka says so many things, and superior people could extract more than I can. But Guru Maharaj said, so he just summarized it in one thing, in one sentence. And I thought, how amazing and wonderful. He said, what is the thirst of the heart? You can mention all these lines, interpret each word, whatever. How will you summarize? What will you get from this? Gurmukhi said, what it's talking about? Addressing the thirst of the heart. What is it the heart is hankering for? That will not be satisfied by any amount of external acquisition, accumulation, control, consumption. You think that's the problem, right? You're outer directed. When what you're trying to achieve, it can only be achieved through inner fulfillment. Isn't there a book like that? That's the title of a book, right? Of Gurudev's, a collection of Gurudev's letters. No, Sridharmaras. So then the verse, Naishamati, is what he's saying. Well, then how do you do this? Remember, he's still thinking that, like, by pursuing Krishna consciousness, you'll get some sort of, you know, power over your life and your circumstances. You know, like a weekend seminar with some speaker spouting humanistic slogans. He still doesn't get it. Hiranyakashipu. So then he's saying, so how do I get that, Prahlad? Tell me, kid, we're on the same team. I'm your dad. You can trust me. You know, he's saying, nice, oh, I'll tell you. You want it? Here's how you get it. Naishamastis tabad urukramangring sprishat janarto bhagamo yadartha mahi yasam padarajo bishekana niskinchananam navrnita yavad. He says, you have to be bathed in the dust of a niskinchan, of a pure devotee. And when you've been, your existence has been consecrated by the dust of their holy lotus feet, then you'll get it. And that's the only way to get it, no other way. And what does that mean? We talked about this earlier, because there's like literally taking the dust, like people do in India. What did Trivikram Maharaj have to tell him? Like, Padebina, like tell him Gurudev does not want you to touch his feet. Because there's literally doing that, and we're not saying you can't literally do it, but don't. But what it means, because if it was that simple, That doesn't count. It does and it doesn't. What it means really, did something fall? Oh. The dust means coming in connection with their conception, what's in their heart, serving them. That's what it means. More, not just literally, physically doing this thing. So when that becomes your life, offering yourself and serve, this is what the heart is thirsting for, this kind of loving reciprocation. The shade of their holy lotus feet means coming under their conception. Right? Krishna darshan, Gaudiya darshan, the way they see things. It's not being imposed on you, it's being revealed to you and have a heart awakening to this sort of vision, gopi vision. Right? And the Rupa Nuga line. So he's saying, when you've got that, then all this other stuff is mukti mukalitanjali sevatesman dharmartha kama gataya samaya pratiksha. Bilba Mangal says, mukti, all these, they're waiting with folded palms to serve a devotee. The devotee's not even asking. But should some necessity arise, they're waiting with folded palms to serve at any moment, the pure devotee. But pure devotee is saying, I don't want service from Krishna. My life's aspiration is to serve the devotees of Krishna. By around this time, Hiranyakashipu had enough of this Krishna consciousness. Or not enough, actually. He needed a real injection, you might say. Like, or, you know, sometimes when someone, like the patient's really gone, then you have to get like a big heart-to-heart type massive dose of spiritual substance. So, you know, Prahlad, I see, very stubbornly representing this, you know, I see you've got some power. You know, I have power too. The gods tremble at the sound of my name. If they hear me walking, You know, everyone lives in fear of me. The whole universe is at my command. You have some power? I have some power too. But I know how I got mine. Where did you get yours? And Prahlad saying, no, the same source as you, source of all power. Now is the mosquito time. Just, we interrupt this broadcast quickly, just because it's going to become annoying. Okay. So I said, I get my power the same place where you got your power. There's only one source of all power, material and spiritual. And it's from the Lord himself. He says, oh, this, because we're told previously about Vishnu, his avowed enemy, Hiranyakashipu, that so Vishnu is also pretending to hide in fear from Hiranyakashipu, right? Like, ooh, I'm scared. Right, so where does he decide to hide? He's saying, in the one place he knows Hiranyakashipu would never look, his heart. So, of course, Vishnu, Andantarastam Paramano Chayantarastam, he's in his heart. And now he's asking Prahlad, this Lord you speak of, where is he? No. Prahlad's saying, he's everywhere, like Bhagavad Gita. I'm in everything, I'm outside everything, I'm everywhere, I'm knowing. Well, he's everywhere. Oh, he's everywhere and with everything? Yes. And there's a pillar, like we have these columns here, these pillars. He's in his, on the, what would you call it? Balcony, veranda, balcony. And he points to this one. Oh, he's saying, is he there? And Prahlad says with great certainty, yes, Father, he's everywhere. Of course, he's also in the pillar. And at this point, we stop for a moment and say, so Hiranyakashipu, what is atheistic culture, so to speak? But even in seeing the infinite, they want to see finite. Deny the existence. But theistic culture is to see the infinite even in the finite. So they see the infinite as finite. We see the opposite. We see, even within the finite, the infinite is there. So when he said, is he in this pillar? And he pulled out a huge sword, and Prahlad says, yes, he's in that pillar. He said, then watch me crush this pillar. And he's crushing the pillar, pulverizing this pillar with his sword. Like, this is what I think of your so-called God and your Krishna consciousness, your Krishna conception. God's everywhere and everywhere. Look, I'm just tearing it to pieces, pulverizing that thing. And then we're whole. Then there's like this roar, not the sweet sound of the cochineal, but the other, a roar, lion's roar. And Hiranyakashipu's like, started, what is that? And he's like, coming out of the pillar is Narasimha, half man, half lion. And he's roaring, screaming. He's so angry because of the mistreatment of Prahlad Maharaj. That's why. Saying, you dare treat my devotee like this. Who do you think you are? And he's saying, no, I'm controlling the universe. The devatas are afraid. No, you cannot abuse a devotee in this way. You don't know how dear he is, this Prahlad, to me. No, he takes Hiranyakashipu. They start having a fight first, actually. Because we know, like the cat, remember, everything goes back to the infinite. Everything. So what do you see the cat do? When the cat knows it has some prey, they like, oh, you're escaping. No. Like, oh, I did. Oh, no, there you go again. You know, like, so here on, they're chasing around. He's trying to get in the stream. And the stream Dave's letting him sort of like seem like he's winning. Then he's not winning, winning, not winning, not winning, back and forth. So he's like, after he's played with him long enough, and the day they're like, finish him off. They're all like in the celestial audience. And so he tires of this quickly, easily, and then at last picks up Hiranyakashipu and places him on his lap and then tears his stomach apart and pulls his intestines out and like puts them on him like a garland. And there's blood dripping down his paws, like, and he's still roaring. Right? And assembled all the gods and goddesses, Lakshmi Devi, Brahma, everyone, they've assembled. And he's screaming and roaring, this lion-like roar, still. Right? And then if someone's following the story, then they think, well, wait a minute. I thought Brahma said, you know, this, he couldn't be killed by a man or a beast, and not in the day or the night, etc. And then what are we told? How did the Lord keep intact the boons of Brahma? It wasn't like inside or outside, but like on a balcony veranda situation. So it was neither inside nor outside. Just like when we're here sometimes, we're neither inside nor outside, if you've noticed. And not day or night this time. This is twilight. It's not day, it's not night. So it's twilight, sunset. And he said, not by any weapon. And in the song, we're saying, Tavakara Kamala Barena Kamabhuta Shringam. Kara means hands. But saying, this is very, his palms are like lotus flowers, right? They look like, his hands are so beautiful, they look like lotuses. Except from these, on the petals of the lotus are nails, lion-like nails. And you know, like our fingernails? What are they? They're not living or dead. They're somewhere in between. So, and it's not a weapon. So they're his nails, and it's with his nails that he's tearing him apart. And, right, he's not a man, nor a beast or an animal, but Nara Singha, half man, half lion. So he keeps intact all of the boons of Brahma. Remember, the insurance policy does not include acts of God, Urukrama, Adbhutakram. Adbhuta means wonderful, inconceivable acts of God. That means Leela, pastimes. So, and then, but he's still roaring. And then the gods, they're saying, they start offering prayers. Oh, you are so great. You are so wonderful. You, in your various incarnations, you come. He's still roaring. And they're going, send another god, another god. They offer more prayers, still roaring. Angry, you know. And then Lakshmi Devi is told, you go. You can, you're his consort. You can pacify him. And our Acharya commentators say, actually she could, but she knows the Lord's heart, really. He wants Prahlad. So they push the little boy Prahlad forward. And Prahlad starts offering his beautiful prayers. And then Nrisimhadev stops roaring and he's listening and tears. And Prahlad's offering prayers. And Gurudev said, so much affection is coming from Nrisimhadev. He started licking Prahlad Maharaj, like licking the lotus face of Prahlad Maharaj. So sweet. And he offers, at the end, he says, whatever you want is yours. And Prahlad's heart is hurt. He said, I didn't worship you because I wanted to get something from you. I'm not like that person you just killed. But what is it? Subhai Britya, no. Nasa Britya Subhai Banik. Banik means a businessman. Prahlad said, I'm not a businessman. Like, I did this, now you give me that, please. Said, I just want devotion to you. And that melts the heart of the Lord, and we're told this is the first expression of pure devotion. And later, Prahlad on the Lord's order because he wants some certain seva him, rules different parts of the universe, the world, because it's seva, but that was not his purpose in worshiping the Lord. Hare Krishna. And this also marks the day that Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadeva Goswami Maharaj came to the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat and the lotus feet of Om Vishnupad, Srila Bhakti Rakak, Sridhar Dev Goswami. And I, you know, reminding me about this the other day, I remember, I mean, this can be told in various ways, but what comes to my mind is we're in London and Srila Gurudev, all his servitors are running around madly packing those bags. You know, there's like a giant suitcase of muri, you know, and many other things. You know. But his rice, that parboiled rice, have to have that certain, you know, and I mean, those are, right, you know, what's it called? Any day? Every day. All right, there you go. Don't buy any day, every day. Right. So every day, that's the one that doesn't have lumps. And like everything is like, it's this big, complicated dance. They're running in different directions, you know, getting all of his things ready and the ticket, Jamuna Priya and these tickets and Ranjan and everybody, Paramahansa Maharaj, they're all going, you know. And I'm sitting, I had the privilege to sit with him. He's sitting on his bed, having a cup of tea. A snack or something, and we're getting ready to go. And he said to me, he says, Maharaj, he said, you cannot imagine how happy my village life was. He lived in a town called Brahmanpur, which means Brahmanpur. They're all Brahmins there, this little beautiful village in West Bengal, almost East Bengal. But so he said, you cannot imagine how happy my village life was. And what I thought about, like, usually when people would, they tell their, like, how I came to Krishna consciousness stories, it starts with something like, you can't imagine how hellish my life had become. And then they tell some story, but not Govinda Maharaj. You know? Just when you thought, whenever you think you understand him, and he's going to contradict all that. He goes, so Maharaj, you can't imagine how happy I was in my village life. I go, oh, really? Yes. And he said, everyone loved me. I loved everyone. The trees loved me. The birds, all the animals. He started going through the whole, not just people, but all the birds and animals loved him, and the trees loved him, the flowers. He's going on this list, like down and down and down, until he finally goes, even the rickshaw wallahs loved me. Like, they were at like the bottom of the list. Like it goes that far. And you go, wow, that's impressive. The birds, I get that. But the rickshaw wallahs, whoa. Wow, that's something. Note that, you know. And he said, and then Guru Maharaj, the representative from Guru Maharaj came to my happy village life. And he said, talking this nonsense. And what was the nonsense? He's saying, your mother is nothing, your father is nothing, this world is nothing, you'll have to leave it and give it up. He said, talking this nonsense. And then he said, but I couldn't deny that what he was saying was true. Like he spoiled my happy dream. I had this happy village life, and then he comes in saying, this world is nothing, it will vanish, your mother and father, everything in it, everything will be gone, then what? And you will leave. He said, it struck my heart, and I couldn't deny that what he is saying is true. That's how he said it. I could not deny the truth of what he said. And then he told me, I am the representative of, you know, Om Vishnupad, Srila Bhakti Rakak, Sridhar Dev Goswami, and he has a mat and ashram and Navadeep, and I want to take you with me. That's your real home. That's where you should be, not here. And Gurudev agreed to go. But he's always very clever. He said, I agree to go. But if we go, we have to go right now. And he goes, I'm ready. He goes, I'm ready too. All right? Then we have to. He gave different, like, conditions, and they're all met. And how do they get there? Like, they have to get there by a certain time, got to go right, you know. Well, I'm saying, so to meet, make this all happen, they have to swim across the Ganga. So they're this is the divine pastimes of Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev. And so when they get there, and he said, I had some idea of an ashram of a great rishi, muni, sage, from what I had heard in Ramayana, Mahabharata, and other places. And then they get there, and imagine this time, Koler Danga, it's not so developed at this point as we know the Mat. Now we can only imagine. And this devotee saw some apprehension in his look. He said, so he turned to me and he said, the ashram may be very small, but there's a big sadhu inside. Oh, okay. And then he meets with Srila Guru Maharaj. And Srila Guru Maharaj said to him, one thing I should say, sometimes Guru Maharaj says things to test you. He doesn't really mean it the way it might sound, but he's testing to see where you, what you feel. So he said, how long do you think you will stay? And Gurudev was insulted. He said, when I come, it's forever. That's what Guru Maharaj wanted to hear. But to get it out of him, he said, and how long will you stay? Implying, there's an out here if you want to take it. And Gurudev said, what? When I come and pledge my, it's forever. And I went, oh. Very good. And he said, and are you prepared to listen to me and not your mind? And Gurudev said, I was very young, so I said, yes. And he said, I didn't know how difficult that could be in the future. He said, but I said, yes. Yeah. And as Guru Maharaj reminds what he said to Achyutananda, he said, young man, you have to follow what I say, no matter how whimsical or whamsical it might be. And there is no such word as whamsical. That itself was proof of what he's saying. However whimsical or whamsical what I say, you have to follow that. And with him too, he said, and so you're bringing him in a room, you know, he described his center, and he said, and so there's a table, a bed, and a chair. Achyutananda said, I don't need a chair. Guru Maharaj said, the chair's not for you. It's in case the respectable guest comes. And we're like, oh, okay. But that's kind of like Guru Maharaj's, you know, checklist when you're like going to join the Mat. But he said, well, you're prepared to listen to me and not your mind. And what song did he always ask Gurudev to sing first on any holy day? Amana Durmati Sangsara Bitore. And what it's saying is, my mind, it's this mind that got me in the mess I'm in at present. But I've heard that Mahaprabhu came with Nityananda and they sent their agent, my Gurudev, to save me. Like, it, that's always the beginning. So anyway, he's there, and Babaji Maharaj, Krishna's Babaji Maharaj, thinks that he's very special and tells Guru Maharaj to, like, this is the one, this is the boy, give him, he's the one who's the proper recipient of all of your wealth, he's worth training. They bring the Dr. Shastri, Sanskrit teacher, Swami Maharaj, loves Govinda Maharaj like his son. Everyone who comes in connection with him thinks, this is the one, he's the one, and they all want him also, but they're very happy for Srila Sridhar Maharaj, because he's a recluse. He'll live forever in a hut with his truth, if that's what's required. But with Govinda Maharaj, they said, oh, now that he's got him, we're going to see the Mat expand, and we'll see, you know, the glories of the Mat expand, spread everywhere, all over India, the world. But so, but there's some, this happens, there's some, you know, devotee, they're envious of another devotee, seeing their qualities, their qualifications. Maybe they're younger, but they're superiorly evolved. That can be a cause of envy. And just like with Prahlad, They're torturing Prahlad. They're trying to make Govinda Maharaj, he was Gaurindu Brahmachari, make his life miserable so that he would leave. Even his mother, and they tried to come and take him away back to his village. That's an Indian thing. Watch a Bollywood movie, you'll get it. You know. So, but, and because when we first came out, we'd hear this pastime of this one valiant devotee was holding on to the, you know, Indian windows are made out of bars, holding on to as they tried to drag him away. Later we understood who it was. It was Govinda Maharaj. Sometimes they would just say one devotee, but other times we understood it was him. They came with like the local village pundit and the, you know, and some heavies and stuff and said, "We want our son back, our village boy," you know. And Guru Maharaj said, the old pundit said, "Don't force him," you know. And Guru Maharaj said, "He can choose." And when he chose, then they tried to force him. And he's holding onto the bars of the window and they couldn't pull him away. But anyway, other devotees there, so-called, thought, "Well, we'll just like make his life miserable and he'll leave voluntarily." One such thing was to give him like mangoes that are rotten. Like there's all the ripe ones, and then the ones that are like mainly rotten, but there's one part that's okay. This kind of thing. They wouldn't just give you a totally rotten, you know, like partially. Think like, "Here you go, boy. Here you go, son." And this is too much for Govinda Maharaj, who loves prasadam in all shapes and forms, sizes, and you know. So he goes to Guru Maharaj and starts saying, telling Guru Maharaj what they're doing to him. You know, oh no, what he did first, he climbed the tree and just started eating ripe mangoes. And you can't do that at the mosque. They have to go to the deity, there's a whole system. So they send them to Guru Maharaj. They think, aha, now Sridhar Maharaj is going to punish him. This is great. They thought, we broke him, now he's going to Sridhar Maharaj. Sridhar Maharaj, we know how hard he's going to punish this boy, maybe throw him out of the mat. He ate the unoffered mango. Yeah, we got him now. And he goes there. But Guru Maharaj's heart is always melted by Govinda Maharaj. And he says, you know, "My dear boy," you know, said, one thing you don't know is actually, besides the deity, the best mangoes are given to me. And Guru Maharaj always has his bed, and he sits there, and he lifts up and shows underneath the bed, there are all these like first class, the best mangoes. And he said, "So whenever you want to eat mangoes, you come to me. And as I'm doing now, I will do that. I'm giving you the best mangoes." And so then everything was adjusted. Srila Govinda Maharaj is happy. But then he thought, you have to know Govinda Maharaj a little bit. That's not enough. So what does he do? He goes outside and in front of those other devotees who are trying to make his life miserable, who are praying for to break him and get him to leave the mat, he's going like, peeling the man. "Look at me." And he's eating the best mangoes and relishing them. And they're like, "Sridhar Maharaj is too attached to that boy, Govinda." And it's a fact, he gave him everything, and those people one day finally left. So, but it's on this day that he came, and then he got Puri, Ratyatra, Harinam, Diksha, everything happened very quickly afterwards. And Guru Maharaj selected him as his successor, and also and not in just some formal sense, but as really the proper recipient of the full wealth of the melted heart of Srila Guru Maharaj was transferred to the heart of his divine servitor. He's the divine servitor. We have these books like Affectionate Guidance, Divine. He's the divine servitor. And his mission Right, so they're talking about mission. Govinda Maharaj's mission is to promote Srila Sridhar Maharaj. That is the mission. Chaitanya Saraswat Mat, from Mahaprabhu to Saraswati Thakur, his conception, Chaitanya Saraswat Mat, the founder of Charja, is Srila Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj. Srila Govinda Maharaj, his successor, his mission is to promote Guru Maharaj. That's the mission of the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat. Right? It's very clear. Right? That's what when he goes around the world, he's promoting the glories of his Guru Maharaj. You cannot remove either one of them from this. That doesn't work. It's in tandem. Right? So, and he's willing to tolerate any amount of suffering to that end, to promote the glories of Guru Maharaj. He said, if someone promotes the glories of Guru Maharaj, I become their slave. And all is forgiven. So we celebrate this day as the day is Om Vishnu Pad Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj came to Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat. And in addition, and I just want to say this too, that so like all the devotees, we reflect on this day throughout the day, many things are taught to us. So the at Radharaman temple, they say Gopal Bhatta Goswami is on this day, he's thinking about how great Prahlad is, and like, out of stone, the Lord, the center of the infinite, came out of stone by the melted heart of Prahlad. That devotion, that love brought him out. And he's worshiping Shalagram Shilas, which are like, Shila means stone, but they're not, they're divine. But he's thinking, when he went to bed that evening, like, oh, I'm so stone-hearted, the Lord won't appear in my heart. But look at Prahlad, he's so great, the Lord comes out of stone to appear. And then he's, anyway, this is my situation. And he goes to bed and had 12 shalagrams, like big ones. And he has a dream, you know, Gopal Bhatta, awaken. And he go check your shilas. And he's saying, uh-oh, maybe something's wrong. He goes, what? This one, the different name, 10, 11. Where's number 12? And there's the beautiful deity of Radharaman. So he's saying, out of the love that's in your heart, you see me in this, I'm revealing myself to you in this way. And that's the history of their deity also on this day. And connected always to the heart, tam bhakti yoga paribhavata hrit saroja of the devotees. Hare Krishna. Jai Nrisimha Chaturdasi ki jai, Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Yitai go premanande. I will try to sing. If I can't, you can take over. Namaste Narasimhaya.
Namaste Narasimhaya.
Namaste Narasimhaya.